All right, folks, it's the dog days of August. Even for me, Chet's working. He's not here right now. He's doing prep for the dry grass burning festival. It's like I don't quite understand it. They harvest grass, then they, anyway, Chet's calling it for the International Harvester Network. But I'm off this week. My producer Gary's off this week. So we're running one of our absolute favorite episodes of all time. It's both Josh and Ben Mankiewicz together. This is from February of this year. Enjoy this bonus Dog Days of Summer episode. This is Josh and Ben Mankiewicz, and we'll see you live next week. Thanks for listening to Play With Pain.
Time to play with pain, where sports and inaccuracy collide. Now, here's your host, veteran sportscaster, and the voice of the International Speed Fishing Championships, Chet Waterhouse.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Play With Pain, hosted by Jeff Cesario. His guests today, one intros killer movies, the other uncovers killer spouses. It's Ben and Josh Mankiewicz. They'll be relaying some worst gigs with Jeff in just a second. But first, time for the Waterhouse update, sponsored by Eggclectic. A dozen eggs, a dozen different birds. Super Bowl! LA squeaks by Cincy like a sumo wrestler inching through the stacks at the Yale Law Library. Rams had so many injuries, their receiving core was down to Cooper Kupp and two contract players from RKO Studios dressed as receivers. In violation of LA County protocols, the Bengals tried to rip off Jalen Ramsey's face mask. No one in Matthew Stafford's entourage seems to miss Detroit at all. And of course, halftime feature Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, and a double wide trailer my cousin would tow next to a lake and move into immediately. That wrap up sponsored by Dick Tucker's Women's Clothes for Men. Olympics! American Erin Jackson wins the 500 meters to become the first black woman to win an Olympic speed skating medal. Set Eastern Europe. American women win gold and silver in the monobob. Boy, they really don't need us, do they? Meanwhile, a recreational snowboarder was chased by a bear. Oh, said the Russians. You mean training. That wrap-up sponsored by Nanazon Prime. Now get that stale butterscotch scandy from Grandma overnight. NBA, the Lakers are so old they got a Groupon at Cartier. And finally, this week in sports history, the date 1971, the place Palm Springs, California, in the Bob Hope Desert Classic. Then Vice President Spiro Agnew hit his opening tee shot into the crowd, injuring two, then hit his mulligan into the opposite crowd, injuring a third person. At that point, President Nixon negotiated a peace treaty with the Palm Springs Chamber of Commerce. This Waterhouse update sponsored by the Dollar Confederate Statue Store. Now, here's your host, Jeff Cesario. Thank you, Chet. That was a good one today, Chet. I enjoyed it. My guests today, they're the most diverse brothers in show business since the Quaids. It's Josh and Ben Mankiewicz. How are you guys today? You look good.
I'm good.
You got a deal on the same black shelving from IKEA. It's fabulous.
We're actually in the same room.
Yeah. You can't beat the Billy bookcase. By the way, just to continue with your analogy, your metaphor there, Josh is Randy Quaid.
I just want to make that clear.
Wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
So Josh is actually broadcasting from Canada somewhere today.
That's right.
Yeah, underground. I'm guessing
very far north. Now we're going to play Worst Gig in a bit, but let me figure out how you two guys wound up in showbiz. Like kind of similar ish gigs. I mean, you're both in front of the camera. How did you, usually one brother just says the hell with it I'm collecting driftwood and making furniture. But you guys both pursued showbiz. Competitive?
Not between us, no. TV news was something I was interested in by the time I was about 8 or 9 years old, because I was watching, you know, Vietnam and the civil rights movement, then later, you know, Watergate, every night on the evening news. And I thought that looked pretty fascinating. So I was interested in this a long time ago. And then I was lucky enough to actually begin doing it in 1975, and they have not kicked me out yet. So here I am.
Where'd you start?
I started on the ABC News Washington Bureau assignment desk, working weekends and in the middle of the night.
Wow, was that anywhere near the nuclear blast zone known as Sam Donaldson? Was he around?
He was the big man in that bureau at the time. And I remember one of my jobs, as you know, you did things like, you know, make coffee, deliver phone messages, rip the wire copy off the printer, sure. roll it into a cylinder, and it had to be a cylinder that was the right size cylinder. You couldn't just roll it up. It had to be like 4 inches across or something so that it would, you know, stack up next to somebody's desk. And I remember getting yelled at about not rolling it tightly enough.
Snoop Dogg have been nailed for not rolling it.
Not rolling it tightly enough. Yeah, that's no longer. That's legal in California now. I remember having to pick up Sam's suit at the cleaners once and deliver it to him. It was a gray suit, and I remember thinking, and it was a three-piece suit because this was the 70s and everybody was wearing a three-piece suit. Sam's was a kind of, all suits back then. I remember our dad wearing suits like this. They were a kind of a blend of like polyester and rubber, and like you just hosed them clean at the end of the month.
It was more of a NASCAR racing suit than
you could cut. It was like Nomex, like the stuff people wear on the decks of aircraft carriers. It was, well, you could cut your hand on the crease in the pants, right? And I remember thinking that if I didn't bring all three pieces of that back to Sam, like I was going to be in three pieces, because his temper was kind of legendary back then.
And I picture him actually only having the one suit.
He's
literally standing in boxer shorts waiting for Josh Mankiewicz to show up with his dry cleaners.
I think he had a pretty big wardrobe back then, because ABC was located next to a big men's store back then called Raleigh's, which outfitted like every guy like that in Washington. And I don't think they're there anymore. And so I gave him the suit, and I remember thinking, you know, please, like if they've missed, if they've taken a button off or, you know, right. But it was okay. I lived to fight another day. And then later Sam learned my name. There was a big thing in that bureau.
Later he learned your name.
Much later. No, there was a big thing where
suit deliveries in, he still didn't have your name.
The rule of thumb in the ABC Washington Bureau was that unless you had been there a year, Sam did not bother to learn your name.
Wow.
And then eventually one day I, you know, like handed him some like rolled up wire copy, and he said, "Thanks, Josh." And I thought, well, I've been here a year.
Yeah. I've made it.
Yeah.
Now, Ben, how'd you slide into movies? Your brother's sitting over there dominating the television controls, watching news and all the other things, watching Watergate and Vietnam reports and all that stuff. You must have slid over to a second TV and just doused yourself in film noir. What happened? How'd you snake into this little rivulet?
Well, that took a little time. I mean, basically, this was a much easier story for me. I was copying my brother. I mean, that's just flat out true. I mean, you know, he taught me how to shave. He taught me how to shampoo my hair, and he taught me how to do a stand up. Like those are the three biggest contributions. He really did teach me how to be on air. He was like, you know, because I started as a reporter, also television reporter. And he was like, look, write your first line, write your last line, write your stand up. Nothing else matters. doesn't make any difference.
You know, that actually goes for stand up comedy as well.
Right? And get a suit you can cut your hand on.
That's right. Get a suit you can cut your hand on. So really I was just copying Josh. I mean, it was sort of easier for me, but we were both different as kids. I mean, like Saturday morning cartoons to us was like, that was the filler before In the News. You know, like that's what that was the segment that we were kind of waiting for
with Christopher Glenn.
Right, right. With Christopher Glenn.
Wow. Yeah.
In the news. Right. And then it would end with him saying, and that's what's in the news.
Yeah. He figured out a way to work it into the sentence every week. I was thought that was very ingenious.
This inflection ability at a young age to absorb the inflection of announcers like that has come in handy, I think, for both of you. Ben, you both actually have similar copy a lot of the time. So I'm guessing you had to come up with a way to sort of deliver this stuff in a little with a different twist each time. I mean, how many times can you say, you know, started as a bit player at RKO? You know, I mean,
well, it turns out you can say he started as a bit player at RKO and then later became a leading man in films like right? It turns out you can say that just as many times as you can say they had a storybook marriage, but what lurked behind these beautiful pictures was something much darker. So
then, then came the twist. No one saw coming.
Exactly.
I like that one.
Except the viewers.
Except except everyone who's seen the program before.
I think one you both may use is, or did she? That did one. She, maybe both of you.
You know, or did she is originally, or did he, or was it, or did it?
Right.
That's that was originally Keith Morrison. Who, you know, is sort of the template on which all of like true crime is written these days.
And by the way, just real quick, also my favorite Dateline correspondent.
So yes.
Go on. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. And he started doing that. And then like then I noticed that people on social media were sort of repeating that. So then I put it in a story of my own. And then people just like loved it so much, or did it, or was it? But that's all Keith. We owe that all to him.
That's fantastic. So you diverge at some point, Ben, from hard news to cinema.
Yeah. So I was doing a local news in Charleston, South Carolina, Miami then. And the Miami show was fun. We got to be, it was a very different kind of thing. And, you know, we got to have a point of view and, but nobody watched. We want
also, if I may point out again, another line that Snoop Dogg has said, the Miami show was fun.
Yeah. The Miami show was fun. Yeah, that's right. So, and then I didn't want to go, you know, local news had, you know, Josh already had was already at date. How long, when did you start at Dateline?
95.
Yeah. So Josh was already at Dateline. He already
1895.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
I, you know, news had on television had deteriorated to turning into such crap that I just didn't want to do it anymore. So when that Barry Diller sold the station that worked at in Miami, I came out to LA where Josh lived and thought I'm going to try and be a game show host, talk show host, something.
Sure.
Right. You know, and I auditioned for everything on the planet. And we have this movie history, this family movie history. But Josh and I grew up around politics. Like we knew about that half of the family, but our dad's half, the political half, that was the important half.
Right. I mean, we were encouraged to watch movies. I mean,
we saw
a lot of movies growing up and was always talked about as being the family business. But Ben is right. That's not what the focus was.
Yeah. So I literally started auditioning for, you know, I must have auditioned for 150 jobs out here more, you know, I never got any of them. And then this TCM thing sort of, stumbled into it and, you know, knew a fair amount about classic movies, but not enough. But I got it and I was, you know, pretty good on the air, thanks to Josh in large part and, you know, and 10 years on the air in Charleston and Miami. And then I just took a crash course in this, you know, over the next 2 or 3 years. I thought I knew a lot when I got it. And then, then you realize, wow, yeah, okay. Yeah, there's a lot. Sure, there's a lot I need to learn.
Yeah. You can't kind of, sail by the seat of your pants on that. You kind of
particularly in what Ben does, there's too many people who know, like
that's
know,
right.
That, yeah, backwards, yeah. I mean, and forwards, and they're watching that channel, not like a little bit. They're watching all the time.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
And all too willing to point out your errors.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, that gem, guys, from Ben Mankiewicz, sponsored by Nugentix, wiener pills directly from Ted Nugent. And of course, also sponsored by, let's see, who else do we have here? Buffet, Canada's premier all-you-can-eat restaurant.
I think also Incognito. You'll never you'll never even know our plumbers are there.
Yes, you'll never guess we're plumbers. Thank you, Chet. Those are brilliant sponsors. Jump in anytime with those. Okay, let's talk worst gig. You mentioned South Carolina, and I know Josh, you started in DC on the lowest rung, which is Whipping Copy. Anywhere in, and it could, you know, sometimes they can happen as recently as 3 days ago. So don't limit yourselves. I just find worst gigs fascinating, because they tend to be buried, but just under the surface of our psyches, ready to jump out at the weirdest provocation. You're suddenly in Costco, bam, there's a candy bar, pow, it triggers a memory, and you're like, oh God, and you just have the douche chills at that point.
Well, my first job in broadcasting was the one I told you about, but my first job, I think my first actual paying punch a time clock job was I was an inventory clerk at a record store in DC one summer in high school. And that required, you know, there was the now it's all on computer. They know exactly how many they've sold and what they still have. Right. Not then. So I was on a little tiny three-wheeled stool, which was about 7 inches off the ground. Like it was like almost the kind of thing a mechanic would be on. And I had a big binder in front of me, like a big trapper keeper. And I rolled up and down the rows of shelves in the record store, literally counting, you know, we have this many of this album. We have this many of this album. Wow. And you went through the whole store and then you just started again. And because they would sell them. And that was the only way they knew what was gone. And I mean, what was selling and what wasn't, because there was they didn't have a computer. Nobody did. This was like 1970.
Yeah, but they had a pen. I mean, they had an ability to do.
That was me.
On
me.
A board.
That's what I did. That was me. I mean, of course, there were a million albums too. I mean, there were a lot of classical albums that were, that didn't sell very often. Elton John's Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy was selling very well that summer,
flying
as I recall.
Flying off the shelves. And yet, I'm sure...
I can tell you exactly how fast it was flying, too.
Ornette Coleman was still sitting at a dozen.
And that was a horrific summer. And it was Washington, D.C., so it was super hot.
Super hot. And
and one more thing. There was a huge dispute between the employees of that store and the guy who owned it, because I can't remember what it was, but it involved them not wanting to take lie detector tests, right? Either because they were offended that they, weren't being trusted, or because they were all actually stealing. I never knew. Right. But that was a huge point of contention. And the boss, who was my connection there, I had gone to school with his daughter, and that's how I got this part-time inventory clerk job. They all regarded me as this plant for management.
Sure.
Like, so they wouldn't talk to me because they assumed that
you were the man.
They assumed that anything that they said, I was going to immediately repeat back to the boss, which of course was not true. But that was a painful.
Wow. Story. So you are suddenly dropped behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
They think you're the stealer. Yeah, any job where they wheel in a lie detector and go, okay, everyone line up.
Is that, Josh, where you, Josh bought me my first couple of albums.
Yes, yes, it is.
You remember the first album you bought me?
1974,
first record I ever
owned. Ooh, 1974, I may weigh in on this too. I'll give it a shot.
Court and Spark by Joni Mitchell.
No.
I will go 74. I'll go Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Well, you're closer. You're closer. But it was definitely just really, you bought it for the title track, Carl Douglas, Kung Fu.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Wow.
And now, in a weird twist of fate, I actually have Carl Douglas's number in my phone, but it's the Carl Douglas who was OJ's attorney.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
who had mastered different verbal kung fu.
Yes.
To help
Carl Douglas will turn 80 this year, and as recently as 4 or 5 years ago, he was still huge in Germany and performing regularly. Yeah.
That sounds like kung fu fighting, and another one that was almost the same.
Yeah. Dance the kung fu.
There you go. Right. Yeah.
That is straight off of TCM. Yeah. That was delivered as if he was starring next to Robert De Niro in a movie. That was impressive.
Yeah. Big in Germany. That's good.
So Ben, along the way here, what has popped up to you as a worst gig?
Well, I mean, I get to my first job in the business is worth mentioning. But I've delivered pizza and or groceries in like 6 states. Like that was always my thing. I delivered.
But not from one state to another, though.
No. That's right. You never cross state lines
with illegal food.
We've certainly crossed from D.C. to Maryland, but that's not. But I had a terrible car accident while delivering pizza for a place called Lastrani's in D.C. in like 1987. I mean, that was always what I did to make money.
Classic fake Italian name.
Right. And I it was one of those car accidents. It was a Honda on Honda, Honda Civic on Honda Civic accident. But the woman I hit was in the old school, really small Civics. And there was traffic in one direction and they let her go across. And she was like, thanks. But there was no traffic in my direction. So she just drove in front of me and I knocked her. This ends well. And I knocked her onto the sidewalk into a biker.
Caveat.
Right. So and every window in her Honda shattered. Windows left. I'm delivering a pizza, two pizzas, right, in the car, going to the same place. And I was, you know, she was French. Her boyfriend was out right next to the Georgetown Hospital. Her boyfriend comes over. He says to me, she called him or came. I don't know. He heard it. It was so loud. He came and he was like, oh, don't worry. She's a terrible driver. It's nice. She was cut up, but she was okay. And the biker was okay too. The car had like bent the bike, but the biker fell, but just was hopping off. Everybody was fine. I mean, we were all sore, but everybody was fine. Both cars totaled, but then another Lastrani's driver, came by.
There was more than one.
Right. He's like, oh no, we had a whole, it was like 4 or 5 of us. It was 87. Lastrani's was making bank.
I will have you know, you ungrateful bastard. Lastrani's is still open because I just looked it up on my phone. It's on Old Dominion Road in McLean, Virginia. Yeah. And they were voted best pizza in Washington by the readers of Washingtonian Magazine. No thanks to you.
No. So it was in D.C. It was on MacArthur Boulevard at the time. And I have the accident. The Lastrani's driver comes with us. That's how he lets the bosses know. And then I get a call from them and they want to reassure me that they got those pizzas delivered. That was their concern. Don't worry. Somebody, we made fresh pizzas and we took them to where you were headed.
Oh, so that's great.
Rest easy. But the first gig I had it might have been Lastrani's, probably different, 86 or 87. And then, so 87, summer of 87, I worked for the George Michael Sports Machine.
I love the George Michael Sports Machine.
Yeah, it was
go to the video. It was a giant cardboard.
It was a giant fake machine.
Real to real, yeah.
And he would hit this giant button.
And some reels would start to roll, even though they were unconnected to anything.
I cannot believe you worked at the George Michael Sports Machine. That is the way, incidentally, sports should be done, because it's now disintegrated into storytelling because everybody thinks they're a storyteller. So you tune into ESPN and it's some horrible in Boston in summer, many times you won't be able to, would you get to the score? George Michael would just go, let's go to the tape. Lions beat the Packers 20-0. You get the score.
First of all, two things.
Let me set this up. You love the George Michael Sports Machine, and I love the George Michael Sports Machine.
And many
people who watch television love the George Michael Sports Machine. Here's who did not love the George Michael Sports Machine was the people who worked for the George Michael Sports Machine.
That's right. It was first of all, he would say, of course, because Warner Wolf did Let's Go to the Videotape. George would say, let's go to let's go to the Meadowlands. Let's go to Giant Stadium. Yeah. Let's go to the LA Coliseum. And he also spoke entirely in the subjunctive tense, right? So it would never be, it was always the Rams would beat the Lions 27-23, yeah. Right?
I'm like, would? No, they did.
Game's over. Yeah, it already happened. The game's over. So Georgia, they, from the first day you get there, they scare you, right? They're like, look, this is, because they, again, and to their credit, right? I mean, ESPN, that's the template for ESPN, right? Highlights that,
sure.
That as you say, SportsCenter has sometimes gotten away from, right? With storytelling. But so Georgia was syndicated across the country out of the NBC affiliate WRC in Washington, which is where I worked. So he'd come in, they'd scare you in the beginning, like that we're changing television, right? And if you screw this up, you're gone. Everybody wants these summer internships here. And there were a lot of us. There were like 8 to 10 summer interns. So one time it was the U.S. Open, and I was given the U.S. Open to log. And George comes on Sunday afternoon, final round of the U.S. Open, the golf U.S. Open. And George comes in at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And he's like, who's got the U.S. Open? I put my hand up. And he's like, I've been watching it for the last 3 hours, and I found 6 shots that are going into the show. Not one of them is a golf shot. You better have all 6. Right? That was sort of the world, because it was always like, a fan with crazy hair or somebody yelling something at Tom Kite, And I remember very clearly, I had 5 of them, and I had some other ones that he hadn't seen. And he was like, all right. Okay.
Wow. Good. You passed. Solid.
Yeah. I brought something else to the table too. So, but that was sort of, and he was menacing and loved to yell and loved to sort of flaunt his, and he reeked of sportscaster. Like he wore sportscaster cologne. Right.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And he came in.
He had that. And he had those jackets, those plaid jackets. Yeah. Sure. Looked like you were flying over an agricultural state.
And he came in like some form of makeup or spray. I mean, he was like Trump. He was orange. There was an orange claw. But anyway, so around the first week we're there, the end of the first week we're there, he gathers us all around on a Sunday. Every intern worked on Sunday because that's when the sports machine aired. And he says, we're right. You had to walk through the WRC newsroom to get to the sports office in the back. And he would say, what happens in the sports office stays in the sports office. That was the first time I ever heard that expression, right? What happens here stays here. So what happens here stays here. And that doesn't mean, you can't even say it. I don't want to hear it in that newsroom, which is, 4 feet away behind the closed door. I don't want to hear it in the newsroom.
And the same paycheck, but go
right,
ahead.
Right, right. So he's like, whatever happens here stays here. If you breathe a word of this to anybody, you'll never work in this business again. This is his inspirational welcome speech.
Sure.
He said, and then he says to a producer, a guy named Joel, he says, Joel, who was that kid that worked here a couple of years ago? And he wrote a column about it for the American University Eagle, right? The AU paper, the local paper, right?
Student paper.
And the guy goes, Jeff Cesario wrote that, right? And he goes, yeah, let me tell you something. Jeff wrote that paper. Jeff's never working in this business again. I'll see to it. I guarantee it, right? So, me and my friend Jim Altman is a reporter now at Hartford. We're looking at each other like this is real. So the next summer, real quick, do we jump ahead? We work across town for the CBS affiliate and a local anchor there named Glenn Brenner, who Josh will attest is the greatest sports anchor who ever lived anywhere. Genius, hilarious, funny, inventive.
And the progenitor of so many people on the air today.
That's right. Yeah. He was a former minor league pitcher and just big, 6'4", huge. During a snowstorm, he once came up behind the beginning of the snow in D.C. paralyzes. He comes up behind the weather anchor, a guy named Doug Hill. And Doug, what's the latest? We'll get to you throughout the show. And Glenn comes up behind him. You don't even see Glenn's head because the shot is just on George. But you see his whole body back there. And he's rubbing Doug Hill's
shoulders. Massaging his shoulders.
Shoulders. Yeah. And he's whispering in his ear. He bends down and whispers, you got this. We're all counting on you. It's a big day. It's a big day. So anyway, we then tell my friend Jim and I had been an intern with me for George Michael. We then tell Glenn Brenner this story about George's inspirational speech that what happened
because you worked there the next summer.
I worked with Glenn the summer after the summer with George, and Glenn starts laughing. He's slapping his leg, and they had a huge rivalry, and they did not like each other. And Glenn says to me, "Let me tell you something. anyone who spills the beans about what goes on working for George Michael, I guarantee they will always have a place to work in this business. I will see to it that they get a job wherever they are.
That's impressive. Make no mistake, Glenn and George do not like each other. Hey, guys, I hate to interrupt, but I actually, George Michael threw me a gig. One of my first gigs, I worked the low ceiling Papa Shot contest. It was a lot of bruises, a big mess. Sponsored, however, by JCPenney, dressing homicide detective for over 60 years. Back to you guys. Wow, those are some incredible stories. Anything happen, Josh? Have you ever been on camera doing a live throw or even a tape? You know, and just something, you know. Something stick out in your head where you go, oh boy, we got to cut that out. Or I wish I could cut that out.
My my first live shot was at the ABC affiliate in Washington, D.C., where I'd gone to sort of learn how to be on TV. This was in like 1980.
I just want to point out, Josh went to Washington, D.C., the ABC affiliate, to learn how to be on TV. Most of us go to like market 213.
Fargo-Moorhead.
Right. Josh went to the nation's capital, the eighth biggest market in the country. But go on. That's right. Yeah.
I was going to leave your shortcomings out of this story. But anyway, so I started there, and I was working weekends and things. And my first job was right after New Year. So it would have been the first couple of days of 1981. I started in December of 1980. So I've been there about a month and I was not good at this. And my first job, my first live shot was to cover a team a high school team that had gone to LA for the Rose Bowl and was now coming back and was going to talk about, you know, how great that experience had been playing in the Rose Bowl or marching. I can't remember what they'd done. Anyway, but they're one of the local high schools. So I get there and everything's fine, except the plane's late landing from LA, right? So then we have this tremendous time squeeze and I barely got anything, you know, on camera with these people. So here I am live outside Baltimore, Washington International Airport, back then called Friendship, or as our dad used to call it, Hate, because it was so far away. And I'm landing at Hate, he used to say. So there I am, and I've written down the first part of my live shot on a reporter's pad. And so it's a, you know, the Dunbar High School, the team, now they're back and they're thrilled. And I read that, right? Pretty much like you can see me holding it up in front of me.
Right. I'm reading it,
right. And then my piece runs that I, you know, put together out there and that they'd cut back at the station. And now I'm feeling pretty good. Cause I thought, well, this is like nearly over. And I flipped the page to get to the tag
sure.
on the next page, but I must've flipped too many pages because I missed the tag. And then when I look down, right when I go, I hear them in my ear and they're like, go. And I look down and on the page, instead of my tag is the list of Christmas gifts, which I had written down that I was going to get my mom about a month earlier. And it says omelet pan. That's the top of the list. I still remember that. So then I look and I start looking through the pages for where the tag is, right? But I'm going the wrong way in the pages, right? So what seems like about 8 minutes pass and the anchor in my ear is like, Josh, right? Which is not something you want to hear. So then finally I stumble through something and then I have a fun drive from like, you know, like another hour long drive from Hate back to the station. And I was then full of hate. So it was self-hate. So it was perfect. And I get back and the anchor was this guy named John Harder, no longer with us. And I come in, I hardly knew him. I'd only worked at the station like 23 days at that point. And I come in and John Harder puts his arm around my shoulder. Like I've just experienced a terrible family loss, which one could argue I had. And then he gave me a little talking to about how I suck. It was never going to amount to anything, but that I should feel better about myself because lots of people suck and never will amount to anything. And I got a lot of company. So or something like that. But
that's a
anyway,
fun speech.
Yeah. But it was very inspirational. He was a nice guy.
So can I jump in here? Cause that you yeah. reminded me of, so my first job's in Charleston, South Carolina, a more appropriate place to start, although a great market. And, you know, Gant gave me my career. So I was, we had an hour long show and there wasn't enough news to fill an hour. And so we'd sort of at this from 6 to 7 and at 6:30, they would have us, those of us who were on it in the 6:30 half hour, they'd throw to us live and we'd tease whatever was coming up. And I was the education reporter, which was a big deal in Charleston because there were crazy conservatives on the Charleston County Board of Education. They would, every year there'd be a guy who'd propose that March be White History Month because we need to be fair, right? That was always the story that we would, and they were trying to remove textbooks and do nutty stuff. So, so I'm outside the school board, a brand new school board. And I remember I had a green trench coat on that Josh had, sort of, I'd gotten advice from him on together. Yeah. You're a reporter. You have to have a trench coat. And I don't know what they were debating, you know, a history textbook. And I was supposed to say, you know, my girlfriend at the time was another reporter and she was somewhere else covering a murder. And she would say, you know, I'm Lee Moody in Monk's Corner. You know, police continue their search for a, you know, a mad killer on the loose. We'll have the story new at 6:30. And then I go and I would say, I'm Ben Magwitz, live at the Charleston County School Board. You know, the debate over textbook continues. I'll have the story new at 6:30. Right. And producer's woman named Angela, and she and I'm out there. And like Josh, realizing that you don't need your notes. You could say, again, the team is thrilled and they can't imagine what great fun they had. John, back to you. That's it. That's all you got to do. Right. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares what you say. Right? Right. So I hear Lee give her tease. And then I hear the thing in my ear that tells me I'm on. You know, it's that little change in audio. Plus you have Angela in your ear going, Ben, go. Right. But I can't remember why I'm there or right. what I'm covering.
Sure.
At all. Pan. And instead of saying, right, I could have said, I'm Ben Mankiewicz, omelet pan, new at 6:30. And literally no one would have said anything. No yeah. one cares, right? Sure. They're not listening. Nobody makes, you know, but I certainly could have said, I'm Ben Mankiewicz live at the Charleston County School Board. I'll have the story new at 6:30. And no one would have batted an eyelash. Right. What story? Doesn't matter. Who cares? But I decided to go a different route, which was in that split second decision, I decided I'm going to pretend I can't hear her. Or that my IFB's out because I can't figure out what to say.
So you were improvising.
I improvised.
Robin Williams your way through the end of this.
Right. Wise. So now, normally, you're going to a commercial afterward. We've already had one tease. You wait 2 or 3 seconds. You realize it's not working. You just roll the brake. There's no problem. But Angela, she was dogged. Right? So Angela just stays with us. And she stays. Ben, go. Ben, go. Wow. Right? And I have to remember, I can't hear anything, right? I can't. I have to be completely the best thing I did during this. So she waits easily 9 or 10 seconds. Ben, go, Ben, right? And I'm thinking, go to break for the love of God. My IFB doesn't work. That's the situation.
You want to put your hand to your ear in that instance.
No, but I'm acting like, tap. I don't even know. I got nothing. I'm like looking around like, are we going to do, I have to look irritated. Like, are we going to do this or what?
So now you're right? acting. You're literally acting.
That's right. That's right. So we get to it. And then finally she goes to break. And I have to remember then, and that is one of my great decisions. I have to remember then I can't hear the break either. Right. I can't then I can't quit now. I have to, I can't hear. Wow. Right. And so
it's
then
just snowballed into a
trilogy. Live truck operator, a guy named Charlie, old vet, grizzled vet comes out. And he knows I can hear because he could hear it, right? Right. And he can probably hear it in my ear. It's so friggin' loud. And he comes out, he just puts his hands up like this, like, hey, what gives? And I go, I can't hear. And he goes, really? right. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, all right, no, but I got you. Right. I got you. And then Angela, of course, she's any lady calls, she calls him cell phone earlier, calls the truck, and she's like, what the hell? And I'm like, Angela, I couldn't hear you. She's like, I kept saying, go, go, go. And I and of course I just have to through the end till this day, in fact. Act like what happened couldn't hear, but I went with a lie. And all again, it doesn't matter. All you have to say is any talk for 5 seconds and then the words back to you, and nobody on live and television is ever going to question anything.
You stumbled into it, and you but you committed.
I did, I committed, I did stick with it.
That is a testament to your grace and tenacity as a human being. And incidentally, that's one of the calling cards of all Lestrassi drivers, I believe, is their commitment to a lie. Yeah. Hey, guys, that one was sponsored by Handelabra, the world's fanciest doorknob, and Zigzag Zit Cream. Your zits will never see it coming. Serpentine with Zigzag Zit Cream. All right, let's wrap it up. Just a couple of quick sports things. Did you guys watch the Super Bowl? Did you care? Have you adopted Los Angeles sports teams?
I have been a Los Angeles Rams fan since 1967. So I was pretty psyched at that game.
An impressive game, too. You got to admit, they played, they were down to nothing in their receiver.
If you're a Los Angeles Rams fan, and I was, I took the St. Louis years off because, in my view, those don't count. Then the Rams have never won a Super Bowl, and because the only one they were ever in was in 1980, and they didn't win that one. So, it was that was a big day for me.
So you're just getting over a massive you probably tied one on. You're liquored up now, aren't you?
I literally can barely stand up. Yeah, no, that's not actually my thing. But I did speak forcefully to the television set, even though there was no one else in the room.
And Ben,
interesting. But I sense that they can hear me when I talk loud enough.
Well, every fan knows that you cannot disrupt the karma. So whatever you do when they win, you have to continue to do
every year. Right.
I was happy for my brother because he grew up in L.A. I grew up in D.C. They moved to D.C. right before I was born. We're a Los Angeles family. And now we're both out here. So I was pleased for my brother. I had 4.5 with the Rams and I had an opportunity to win a season long pool that would have changed. It would have taken me from the red to the black in my life as a gambler.
Wow.
It didn't happen.
Well, that's weird because usually that does happen.
Yeah. So I was, it was frustrating, although, and I have to believe that if Beckham doesn't get hurt, that the Rams cover that game. It turned out that guy makes a difference.
Yeah, I agree. You need to talk about the bet that you did win.
What bet did I win? Oh, that I came in second?
No, the bet that you
about. Oh, yeah, no, so I did. I did. I finished second in the pool, so I won a little something, but it's not life-changing. It was really going to be life-changing.
You have to take.
Right, but you made a specific bet. You were.
Yeah, I did. I did. So I made a couple other little dumb bets, $50 here and there, but one of them was at 7-1, the color of the beverage that will be dumped on the winning coach.
Wow.
And inexplicably, again, I just look for, I don't bet a lot of stuff in this, but I look for little things that I, you know, like little things that I think are wrong. Like everybody thinks they're a smart gambler looks for, right? And some of them made sense, like the Ram running back Cam Akers under, right? They got too many running backs, I had him for under you. But then the other one was this thing, and blue was 7-1, and I was like, well, if the Rams win and anybody thinks about it ahead of time, the beverage will be blue. It's the Rams. So I made that bet for $50 and Cat came in at 7-1. I was pleased. I was pleased.
So
by that.
I have always wondered what the TCM hosts did just off camera. And I think we just found out.
It's a massive
sleazy underbelly of show business and gambling going on there. That's impressive. Although that's the kind, you are a natural gambler. And I think you proved that, Ben, with your stand-ups in South Carolina. you are a gambling man. Hey guys, that was sponsored by Gascade. Let your wind out in gentle, hard to pinpoint waves with Gascade. Thank you, Chet. Thank you guys so much for coming on. My guests, Josh and Ben Mankiewicz. Follow them on Twitter at Josh Mankiewicz. At Ben Mank 77. Josh, what's coming on Dateline that we should keep our eyes peeled for? We got an
right after the Olympics, we're back. I've got a fabulous story coming up out of Oregon, in which the suspect is the last person you'd expect.
And Ben, you're always flying off to, as I like to say, Garbo Fest. Or some sort of Ingmar Bergman comedy invitational or something. What have you got coming up? What should we look for on TCM? Any events?
Well, we have, first of all, coming up in March is 31 Days of Oscar. We'll get to the Oscar.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great.
Every this year, every movie we show is an Oscar winner of something. Every movie, 24 hours a day for 31 days. And during prime time, be different decade of Oscar winners from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and all throughout up until.
So it's TCM's March Madness.
That's right. It's exactly right. It's TCM's. And then in April, our film festival is back in person for the first time since 2019. So
that'll be a blast.
Very, very pleased about that.
Guys, thanks so much for doing this. Much appreciated. Had a blast.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Chet.
Follow me on Twitter at Real Jeff Cesario. My album, What Was I Thinking, streaming everywhere. The Play With Pain mugs available at jeffcesario.com. Look for me on the road soon. I'm just starting to map out some tour dates, see if I can't get back out there and make some people laugh through these weird and hard and gambling times. Chet, what do you have coming up? Well, guys, if you want more of me this weekend, I'll be in Spittoon Falls, South Dakota for the 33rd annual Grapefruit Spoon Ice Carving Invitational. Yes, we are going to be there all night. Sponsored by Exasperilla, the soda that tests your patience. This is Chet Waterhouse reminding you to play with pain.